The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1113. It's the 9th of July, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Stephen Blythe, CEO of Expediator. XPD is the ticker there, and Stephen talks about their intention to raise approximately £7 million in order to support the acquisition of Import Services Limited. Also on the podcast, Dennis Au, a non-executive director of Gamfactory, GAMF, listing soon, but you can follow it on Vox Markets right now. And Dennis talks about their business and the strategy to expand into Europe. It's quite big in China. Also on the podcast, oil and gas sector specialist Malky talks about the following companies: Echo Energy, Sylvana Petroleum, Rockhopper, Premier Oil, and Amerisay Resources. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Blythe, Chief Executive Officer of Expediator. XPD is the ticker there. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Yes, good afternoon. Good to talk to you again.
Now, we've got some significant news out about a proposed acquisition and placing. We'll get into the details of that in a bit. Before we do, Stephen, for people listening right now not familiar with the company, could you summarise what you're all about, please?
Yeah, we're an international freight management and logistics business. We've been doing freight forwarding for over 30 years. We have an affinity business which provides services to 1,700 truckers running 13,000 vehicles across Europe. And we do warehousing and logistics in the UK and Central and Eastern Europe.
Excellent stuff. And I'm just looking at your share price on the chart there. It's quite an impressive climb from bottom left to top right. So well done that. And congratulations, by the way, on your news today. £12 million transaction and successful fundraising you announced. So can you tell us a bit more about Import Services and why it'll be a good fit with Expediator, please, Stephen?
Yeah, Import Services was started over some 30-plus years ago by John Enyon. A fantastic business. I'm really looking forward to working with the guys. We are going to learn a lot from them. It fits into our strategy. We did, in June, announce the deal with Anglia. Anglia gave us a fantastic facility at Felixstowe, air freight at Heathrow, cross-dock in Raynham, and a great Birmingham office. This gets us to Southampton. So what we're doing as a group, an Expediator group, is we're changing from just being a European road freight forwarder. If Brexit does happen, trade is going to come in from the Commonwealth and overseas. It's not going to come in by road. It's going to come in by sea and air. And we're ready for it.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, I was thinking there. So by increasing your position here in the ports, you are better placed for Brexit, yeah?
Absolutely, yes. We've also got a Dover office. So hard, soft, soggy, whatever the Brexit is, we're ready.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And at the moment, who knows where it's going? But there we are. So,
I don't think the English politicians do, but there you go.
They don't, do they? I mean, that's the trouble. They're arguing over it, and no one really knows what's going on. That's the trouble. So it's always good to put yourself in the right position. Take us through. Why did Import Services want to sell the business, and do you believe you can expand the business from where it is now?
Well, the reason for the sale, John is 75. He's going to carry on. He's got a fantastic team. And what he did was effectively an interview process. So we had to go through a lot of hoops, a lot of interviews to prove to John that we would be a suitable pair of hands to carry on and look after what he spent years building. It's a truly, truly very good company. It's going to fit in very well with us. One of the acquisitions we did last year in November, a company called Regional Express, they're also based in Southampton. We're going to have some fantastic synergies between those two companies. I was in Luxembourg with Eric yesterday visiting Amazon, and there's some great synergies that we're going to be able to drive through between our regional business and import services.
Do you know, I love the idea of that sort of interview process, almost like he's checking you out as if he's part of his family, you know. I love that.
He's quite right to decide where he places his legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he cares that much about it. That's excellent. And it speaks volumes that he's chosen you guys, really, isn't it? So, anyway, listen, you've grown substantially over the last 12 months, and you two are trading on track for this year. What has been the key factors behind the growth of the business then, Stephen?
Well, we make money from all sorts of areas. We've got over 10,000, 15,000 customers. We've got three main divisions, but we're now introducing a fourth division, which Michael Grange, who joined us, he's ex-Tesco, he joined us as CIO. He's now become COO, and he's going to be controlling our e-commerce growth, which we think is going to be, or I think is going to be, an absolutely brilliant area for the group.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Stephen, listen, you're always very busy and you're expanding. The share price is looking good. And, I'm sure people have heard you are already hitting that follow button. I've seen, you know, your company featured on the top five most followed list quite a bit in the last few weeks. But for people not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Whilst we've been on the market since August last year and had a 200-300% increase, whatever it is, there is still a long way to go. We're still at the start of this journey. There's an awful lot of things that we want to try to do. There's loads of deals out there. We're well positioned to consolidate what is a highly fragmented market, not just with UK acquisitions, but worldwide. And so there are things which I'm looking at which are further afield than the UK, without giving too much away. We make money. When we make money, we like to pay it out. And we pay out one third of our expected earnings after tax in November, and then we pay the balance out after our AGM. So we pay 50% of earnings after tax. We pay dividends. We make money, and we pay it out. I've got a few demanding shareholders at home who like to spend it.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, good to chat to you, and like you say, you're always looking out, always doing deals, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
I think so, yeah. Good to talk to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Au, Non-Executive Director of Gamfuck Jewellery. That's GAMF ticker. Dennis, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
For people obviously not aware of the company, give us a brief summary, please, Dennis, what Gamfuck is all about.
Yes, thank you, Justin. Well, Gamfuck, we are a jewelry designer and retailer headquarters in Shenzhen, China. We focus on providing bespoke jewelry services and products to both individual and corporate customers. We have about 8 different authorized resellers within China.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. And you've raised, how much have you raised today? Are we hoping to raise there?
We're hoping to raise between £3 to 5 million.
Okay, and you're on the standard list, is that right?
Yes, we are, Justin.
Okay, excellent stuff. And so, first and foremost, why London? And why have you chosen to list in London?
Well, the company believes that they are trying to expand their jewelry business into Europe, and they believe that London is the gateway to Europe, and hence is the biggest financial market. So, therefore, that's why they chose London.
Excellent stuff. And so it's a obviously established business. It's got revenues and profits. Can you take us through that, if you could, Dennis?
Yeah, sure. Yes, it is a very positive cash flow business. In 2017, the revenue was about £24.9 million. The EBITDA was about £6.2 million, and the profit after tax was £4.5 million. So it is a highly profitable business.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you say at the moment how does it work? Is it just online retailing in China, and you're looking to expand over here? How does it work? Just shops? How does it work?
Right. We are what we call a O2O business, a online to offline. So basically, a customer comes onto our website, find whatever they need, and then they can purchase online, or they can visit one of our resellers to purchase the jewelry. So we're trying to emulate the same model here in Europe.
Okay, and so you will be setting up some resellers, is that correct?
Or correct.
Have you got some already?
Yes, we're in talks with a few of the resellers here. So yeah, hopefully that will pan out well.
Yeah, and what is it about Gamfuck jewellery that's different, that's special, that would appeal to people, you think, that's not really out there at the moment?
We find that, I would say the key highlights of Gamfuck, it's China, it is the largest jewellery market in the world, so we are proud to be part of it. We are a very highly profitable business with a strong balance sheet, and also we also paying out a yearly dividend yield of 8.4%.
Wow, that's amazing. And ideally, if we're talking in a year's time, Dennis, where would you hope to be? Where would the business hope to be?
Well, I mean, hopefully we would like to see our business grow large in Europe, and also at the same time, to see our business also grow as well in China. So, and also hopefully bring more returns to our shareholder here in London.
Yeah, and just talking about the Chinese market there, I mean, is it quite buoyant as far as jewellery concerned at the moment? Is it quite good?
It is. The market there for the Chinese company, for Chinese jewellery is actually very big at the moment. China is actually currently ranked the top country in the world for jewellery, with a annual sales of £66 billion in year 2016.
Wow. Okay, cool. Well, I know you've sort of gone through them already, but just to reiterate, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of this, but of course they're not following the story because you're newly listed, give them three quick reasons again why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please, Dennis.
Yeah, sure, Justin. I mean, one, again, we are a very profitable business with a strong balance sheet. We are in China's largest jewelry market. And also, we are a cash dividend-paying company with a yearly dividend yield of 8.4%.
Excellent stuff. Dennis, thanks for the chat, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is oil and gas specialist Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, Justin. And you?
Yeah, good. You know, I did a report. I mean, it seems like now it was a report from RT, and they were saying that if Iran block a certain strait, I don't know what it was, the Haku Strait. Hormuz, yeah, strait, that oil could go to $250 a barrel. And I thought, hang on. So I read into the article, and in the article, it was like a sensationalist headline that, of course, it catches your attention. And most people retweet the headline. They don't actually read the detail. So yeah. I read into it, and the analysts were saying it's highly unlikely because it's highly militarized zone by the Americans and all that stuff. It's a very well-protected zone, and because, you know, of course, huge commercial importance, that strait, because apparently most of the oil exports come out that strait. And they say it's very unlikely to happen. And so I got the impression from the article it was very unlikely to happen. But yet people retweet that advert, that headline, you know. And I'm thinking, what's happening here? It seems like Russia seems to want to pumping the oil price up a little bit, you know.
No, it's. The bottom line is that if you did close the Straits of Hormuz, the oil price could be upsending you light. But that ain't going to happen. And but it would create a very high oil price because. The Americans and the Saudis would take military action to maintain the Straits of Hormuz. So, it just shows you what the geopolitical situation, which is as difficult as it's been for a while, as we run up to November when Iranian exports will be under sanction.
Yeah.
And not just the oil, but also any financing of it or anything like that at all. So.
Yeah.
The price is set reasonably fair. I don't think it's going to run away, but I think it's a perfect storm for the oil companies who are still working on the fact they've cut their costs so much in the last two or three years, and they've got the high price, to give them fantastic revenues.
Yeah, exactly. What's the price at looking about? Well, Brent about 77.
Brent's about 77. It's up about 30 cents this morning. 77.40 or something like that.
Yeah, cool.
West Texas has caught up a little bit. It used to have a discount of about nearly $12 at one stage, but there's big irony for President Trump is, of course, that he has the, you know, Texas is capable of producing more crude. Mm-hmm. They can't do it because they haven't put the infrastructure down in the pipeline. So you combine that with the fact that one or two of the Canadian pipelines are down at the moment, and actually, you know, they could be producing more in Texas as well. So
yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to some company specific news or movement. What's happening there, Malky?
Well, I think the big news again is we've talked about this every week, but it's because some things are happening every week. Is Echo Energy. Echo has this morning announced the successful completion of its fourth well. They had a four-well drilling campaign, and it looks like another very positive result indeed. They've called it a notable gas column in the Toby Farah, which is what they're looking for. And they reckon they've got 30 metres of potential net pay of what looks like wet gas, which is gas with liquids. And we like that because liquids are very profitable, obviously, trucked away and you know, like oil. Mm-hmm. And that is at the upper end of the range of both their contingent and prospective resource targets or estimations. So, you know, in the CPR, which is a Gaffney-Cline CPR, so it's pretty good, they had a target of 19 BCF. Of gross best case contingent and 18.7 BCF of prospective, and if they hit those targets, then there's absolutely little doubt that this Fraction D is going to be a very early starter, and they should be able to. What's happening now is that the four wells have been completed, so the drilling rig is now being demobilized and moving off site. But the Quintana 1, which is a completion and testing rig, is starting, and they'll test all the wells that they've drilled and see what they all look like. But we've obviously had initial expectations very positive. So what will happen now is that they'll all be tested. But as I say, going back to Fraction D, you know, it looks like there's every chance that they'll be able to make an early decision on monetization of this development. And, so everything is happening quite a lot earlier than most people thought over at Echo Energy, and it's extremely good news.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been saying this a lot on the chart. It still has to break that initial spike previously, went up to like 19, just shy of 20 pence. But like I said, once that's broken that resistance, I think it's gonna go crazy. But
I think it will get crazy. And I saw, what is it, 18.8 this morning or something?
Yeah, 18. I've seen it. Well, 18. So look, 18. I've got there on the chart. It's a little delayed, but let's look at Echo on live. Yeah, 18.15 at the moment.
But, right.
Yeah, half decent volume.
I think that's very good news.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Anything else, Malky?
Yeah, I had a long chat with the guys at Savannah Petroleum. That's SAVP, not to be confused with Savannah Resources. Savannah Petroleum. I spoke with Andrew Knott last week. They put an update out on their Seven Energy acquisition, which is what they're making in Nigeria at the moment. I think people have been a little concerned that it's taking a bit longer and that it wouldn't complete. I'm pretty sure it will complete. Andrew says that the final legal steps are underway. Completion is now expected in the third quarter. So that'll be just a positive step because they've been producing since the beginning of the year significant hydrocarbon production. And they're even extending or hoping to, sort of applying for permission to extend the pipeline network so that they can increase and bring in some higher margin gas sales. So that will increase cash flow and revenue. So I'm expecting extremely good news from the Seven Energy acquisition, which is due to complete shortly. And of course, in Niger, they've got a three-well drilling campaign there. The first was a success and the second one was even better. So what I think here is that you've had a significant success with the drill bit in Niger, that gives you lots of exploration upside, and you've got the Seven Energy giving the cash flow in due course, which will pay for that, and a dividend, which people haven't taken into account yet. Mm-hmm. I think Savannah will pay a dividend and be cash positive and have exploration upside. And you can't ask much more than that. Shares have hardly moved. They're way too cheap.
Yeah, SAVP, marvellous stuff. Okay, anything else, Marky?
Couple of others. I noticed that Rockhopper, in its announcement about the Greater Mediterranean drilling campaign, which is just starting, announced last week that they and Premier have appointed Standard Chartered as being their lead bank for the for the financing of the phase one of Sea Lion in the Falklands. The bottom line here is that this ticks the sort of final box as they put together the final layer of senior debt for the project, and we'll move it towards sanction, which I expect later on this year. This is another one where it's an absolute perfect storm of 3 years of getting the price down. Everything is getting to its cheapest level in terms of this development. Huge cutback, 50-70% cutback in cost, if not more, and the oil price is $77-$78. You know, this throws off a huge amount of cash at these levels, and I have to say that I think Sea Lion will be an extremely positive when it goes ahead, and it'll be a very important part, not just for Premier, where I'm expecting to be 20% or more of their activity in the mid-20s, but obviously crucial for Rockhopper, which is at long last beginning to make some decent progress on the share price front, justify inclusion in the bucket list.
Yeah, and do you know what's quite interesting? I was just say, you know, it's several years' time, Mark. You may have to go to become a new energy specialist. Because, I mean, they're all the big boys are getting into the space now, aren't they? They're getting BP and Shell, and it was BP bought all the... Do you see that news? Bought one of the biggest, I think, electric vehicle charger companies in the country. So they're slowly... And the thing is, whenever something, you get a mass change like this, what the big guys do is, this happened in tech as well, whenever you get a smaller company that's, becoming sort of dominant in this field, all the big guys do is, I mean, at that time, they're like, it's a liability. They just buy them up, and it becomes an asset, you know?
And of course, it's absolutely, nothing to these companies. They're buying companies, whether it's 50 or 100 million or even a billion. If you think of what the cash flow is for Shell or BP, they'll just gobble it up.
I've noticed a couple of stories, but have you noticed almost the targets or the focus of these bigger companies, looking towards new energy and electric vehicles, aren't they,
Yeah, and batteries. Certainly renewables, batteries, all sorts of things. And, and their numbers show that they're going to be very small beer compared to, fossil fuels for quite a long time to come, certainly to 2030. But, as you say, it's a cheap option. Just buy a few of them up and keep them in the portfolio.
Yeah, exactly. Mark, anything else, Mark?
Yeah, just one quick one. I noticed last week that Amerisur Resources, which is a favourite stock. Now, they've got very exciting prospects coming up. They've got three really key wells which are going to be spudding in the next few weeks. They're doing Pintadello 1, which is the really important end sands anomaly in southern Colombia. They're doing Indico 1, which is in northern Colombia with ONGC. That's a very exciting potential. And, of course, they're doing Mirapara 1, which is on PUT-8. All three of these wells show that there's potential, it's very exciting exploration upside for this. But Amerisur has still got significant production. It's got over 5,000 barrels a day, and it will be more, but 5,000 barrels a day, very, very profitable crude oil. Constantly increasing revenues. You and I have done the sums on this before. Even if it's only 5,000 to 7,000 barrels a day at the moment, they're getting $75 a barrel, and their costs are below 20. So this company is in very, very strong position. I think there's a lot of upside, increasing revenues, exploration upside, And America looks to me like it's been left behind on this one, as people worry about the short term, because they're increasing, they're doing a lot of work to increase production at their existing wells. But I think the market has forgotten about the upside for this one.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty substantial.
Well, I just did 5,000 times $50, if that's what they're getting, if they're clearing that, then just say over 300 days a year of downtime and stuff. But that's $75 million in free cash flow. So that's, and you would expect the company to be valued on 5-10 times that. And they are like 180 million at the moment, market cap.
Yeah.
So, say if they are doing that, obviously, and they're doing more as well. More is coming online. And there's potentially, because the share price is annoying. Looking, it's had several false breakouts above the 200-day moving average and then just gone to previous lows. But I mean, in fact, recently it's at a higher low, so maybe now this has maybe seemed like a bottom there. That 13 pence level was like the final support, maybe. So who knows?
Absolutely right.
Marvelous stuff, Mike. Good to chat to you. And we'll be in fact, I'm not here next week, so we'll have to take a break. But
okay.
So it'll be the week after, Malky. All right.
Look forward to it, mate. Take care now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows: at five, Alpha Growth, ALGW. At four, N4 Pharma, big fall of the day, N4P. So apparently one of its endpoints weren't met in this lead, one of the lead drugs there, in a test, preliminary test, and it's taken about a 54% haircut. If that makes any sense. At three, UK Oil and Gas Investments, UKOG. At two, Coovs, which is, of course, Coov is ticker. And number one, the most followed company, is Bell Zone Mining. A nice RNS out. Dennis shot up today, and people are chasing that spike. BZM. All right. Top five most popular RNSs in the last 24 hours. At five, Two Shields Investments. That's investment in leading e-commerce platform, WeShop. At four, Metal Tiger. Botswana Copper Silver Project A4 Dome. Visible copper. At three, Sirius Minerals. RBT Materials Handling Agreement and Lease. At two, Toby Fairer Gas Column, interpreted at CSO 2001 in brackets D. And number one, most popular RNS came from UK Oil and Gas. Corporate update, change of AIM trading status. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.